Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight, we'll go back in time to seasons past, when 22 men graced the rugged fields of yesterday, fighting for one more first down, one more yard gain, one final score which would bring victory after 60 minutes of battle on the gridiron. Tonight, we will explore the world of gridiron greats. Welcome to Gridiron Greats, football history and its memorabilia, on the Gridiron Greats Publishing and Broadcasting Network. In conjunction with Slick Enterprises. We're live from the Wallingford, Connecticut home of Gridiron Greats Magazine. And I'm Bob Slick, publisher and editor of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'll be your host for the show. Gridiron Greats is the only publication in America which focuses upon the history and memorabilia of the North American football game since its inception in 1869. We cover 150 plus years of football history and memorabilia, and you can find us on the web at GridironGreatsMagazine.com. It is at this time I'd like to introduce my co-host. He's a senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats Magazine, a football memorabilia historian specializing in pre-World War II items, in particular Red Grange, and also Seattle Seahawk items, in particular Steve Largent. He hails from Portland, Oregon. Mr. Joe Squires. Joe, welcome to the show this evening.
Captain, always a pleasure. Great to hear the sound of your voice, your introduction, all of it. Glad to be here again.
We're back. And I just want to touch very briefly my prediction of the Super Bowl was slightly off as they ended up playing the San Francisco 49ers, who made a very, very poor decision at the end of the first half, toward the end of the first half when they got the ball back. Should have gone for a field goal. I don't know what they were thinking, what they were doing, but that's neither here nor there. The Chiefs won. Congratulations, Andy Reid and the organization.
Finally, yeah. Yeah, certainly doesn't help. They made the decision to not put points on the board. Never good.
That's right. I am of the philosophy, and I'll conclude that part by saying, in a game such as that, you have to go for points because that's the only way you're going to win. And as much as you're trying to start something different, spark whatever it may be, you got 30 more minutes left of the game, get to 3 points up there, and you never know. The score could be 3-point difference, You'll be winning it by that field goal. So, poor decision.
Yep. 100% of the teams who've lost games did it by not scoring more points than the other team.
Can I quote you on that?
Not a very well-known fact, that one right there. But
you need one more point to beat your opponent. That's all it is. All right, let's get started tonight. There's a lot of auction action that has occurred over the past 3 weeks or so since we were last on the air. And I'm going to lead off talking about a hunt auction at the, and it was but right during Super Bowl, right? Super Bowl or shortly right afterwards. It had some incredible pieces in it, and I'm going to hand off to you, Joe, and talk about one particular area that was very interesting and very historical, to say the least.
Yeah, the I think it was February 10th. It was was the auction. I think it was the week after the Super Bowl, but obviously a very, very rare, and that's what we're here talking about. You don't hear us talking too much about 2019 Bowman Chrome refractors, but 1926 Pottsville Maroon postcards went up for sale. Great auction item. Last time we saw one of those was over a decade ago. 1926 Pottsville Maroons postcards, glued or taped to a, to a board with a program, went for $26,000. Some pretty rare postcards in there. And I think I've mentioned before, you don't see these. I'm working on collecting this set, and I'm lucky if I had one or two every couple of years. Last time I had a trade with Jeff Payne, I traded some star player candies for some of his dupe, maroons, and that's the last time I've added to that set.
Wow.
Tough set. Very rare. It wasn't even a complete set, and it went for $26K plus the juice.
Now, fill in our audience again. How many cards are actually in that set?
I will admit, Bob, I have a spreadsheet. I want to say, someone's going to laugh at me when I throw this out there. I don't remember.
Like 20?
I don't remember. 18 pieces. I think there is. I would say 20, because I know that
was
18 pieces. Yeah.
I'm almost sure it's 18 or 20, but in any event, they are rare. And the one thing I was talking to another collector about it, and he was commenting, he was amazed at the price for the item, so on and so forth. And he said to me, and it's something I agreed with him 100%, we both attend postcard shows. And can you imagine going up to a postcard show and go to a dealer and just ask them, do you have any, early photograph postcards of any type of sports player? And, they pull out their boxes, and out of the blue, somehow you pick out postcards. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And the dealer, totally oblivious to what he has, says, how about $5 a card type of thing? And, as you, try to tear out your wallet as fast as humanly possible, and give the guy a $50 bill for everything. It's amazing. And to me, I'm wondering if they're not more hidden out there, and collectors really have no clue what they are. You know what I mean?
Well, not a lot known about this set. I mean, it's obviously by Zacco's, issued by Zacco's, so I would imagine it's a regional set. How many were printed back then? I mean, how many made it out? I mean, we've talked about, paper drives before. It's, there's not.
Yep.
Sounds like our guest is on the line.
it's truly amazing to actually think about, how many are still really in existence, if there are any complete sets, and B, how many more are out there. So, let's throw out a number here. What do you think? There are like 12 of each in existence? Less, more? I'm curious.
Less, 10 or less would be my guess.
Okay.
Andy Becker first introduced me to this set 10 years ago when he called me and said he came across a partial set and that I want a few, and he explained to me how rare they were, and I bought some. And eight years later, I hadn't seen any come to auction. And, before Jeff and I got a set, I mean, pretty rare. And obviously it's got a Charlie Berry and a Tony Latone card in there. There's some heavy hitters in there, but, regional set. Exactly. I mean, it touches a lot of bases, championship year. In the same hunt auction, we had a pennant on the program about 2 months ago. We had a pennant collector on, and in that same hunt auction, a 1929 Frankfurt Yellow Jacket pennant sold for $6,500 plus the juice. And I was like, that is a lot of money for a pennant. But it reinforces what he mentioned, just the popularity of rare, vintage pennants. There was a Bruce,
they're really picking up in demand, to say the least.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I call that the gridiron grade bump. You mentioned it on this show, and suddenly people want to collect it. Steve Largent. In that same hunt auction, the 1941 Bruce Smith Heisman Trophy, which was obvious, it was up for sale. It did not sell. I think it was a live auction format, which was pretty fascinating to watch. It took me a couple lots to figure out how it worked, and I'd received some advice to have some low number items early in the auction you could bid on just to practice and see how the rhythm went. But that did not sell. During the live auction, it looked like it sold for like $60,000 or $80,000, which is well below what the estimated price was. But and then when the website refreshed, it said did not sell. So obviously they had a minimum set to that.
Right. I would assume something like that, a minimum would have to be $100,000 to $150,000. I can't see it being anything less than that. You know what I mean?
Without a doubt. Yeah, without a doubt. Moving on. I mean, we wanted to talk about auctions. Moving on. There's right now in Heritage, there is a. Everybody knows I collect uncut sheets, and just announcing one more time, my White Whale uncut sheet is a 1935 Chickle. If anyone knows, please reach out to me. But in Heritage, I always have to get that little mention in, Bob. But in Heritage right now is a 1933 Sports King uncut sheet that is for sale. It's got about there's about 4 days left in the auction, and this is a 6x4 sheet, 24 cards. It's got Red Grange, Jim Thorpe in the football area. It's got Babe Ruth, Ty Cobb, in the baseball, and Jack Dempsey. I mean, it's Sports King. And it's the only uncut sheet from the SK set that I've ever seen. And I was really, really hoping I could add it to my collection. But it's at $46,000 right now, $55,000 with the buyer's
credit. Wow. Wow.
Which is a little bit out of my range.
What do you think that's going to go for, 100 plus? With the juice?
I have no idea, Bob. When I first saw it, it was at 10,000, and I was like, wow, that's a little beyond my price. But you know what? Never seen it before. And I put a bid in, was immediately outbid, and came back the next day, it was at 25, came back the next day, it was at 30. Yeah, and it's crept its way up to 46. I have no idea. It is the only uncut Sports King, 1933 Sports King sheet I've ever seen. I mean, and who knows, will we ever see one again? And how incredible just to see, nearly 100-year-old sheets come up for auction like this. It's pretty cool, but it lets you know there's some buying power in the baseball, world out there with, Babe Ruth and Ty Cobb on this. And then, obviously it's the same year as the Gaudy, which they consider his rookie card. So.
I think the baseball players on that sheet will end up driving the entire sheet. And I could be way underestimating what it's going to go for. I mean, it could go for $250,000. Who knows? I mean, depending because of the rarity and because of all the rare players that are on that sheet. It is an amazing sheet, over 100 years old. It has everything you could possibly want in a rarity.
Yep.
For a sports collectible. You can't get a better lineup than what you have there. So, I could be wrong. It could really, really fly.
Well, hopefully when that second series 1935 Chickle uncut sheet shows up, it goes, those baseball players or baseball collectors don't notice it, and it goes for half. of what it is now. But, man, I was stunned to see it get this high. It's pretty cool to see, though, too.
Yeah.
You know, manageable sheet, 24 cards, so pretty beautiful to frame and hang in your office or home or your cigar room, whatever. But pretty cool. And yeah, and in that same heritage auction is a very nice looking PSA 6 Broken Nagurski rookie card, 35 Chickel. It's at nearly 20,000. It's at 19.2, you know, including the VIG.
Yeah.
So we're obviously a steady march in what we're seeing for Nagurski prices. Just the power of Bronco in football, you know, collecting.
Well, I think that Nagurski, my honest opinion, and again, I could be very wrong, I think it's going to end up going for over 27, 28 with the juice, if not more. And
wow.
I'm just wondering if somehow it's going to end up in a bidding war with, you know, between two collectors or two investors who are saying, okay, this is probably the best snag that's going to be on the market for a long time. Therefore, I got to have it. So therefore, we're going to run it up. And if that happens, holy mackerel, it's going to be, lights out for that set. That's all I can say.
Six months ago, a PSA 8.5 Nagurski went for, what was it, like 140, 160,000? I mean,
right.
there's a big difference between the prices, but the sole PSA 8.5, and it was a very good looking card. Better looking than half the PSA 8. Better looking than, I think, the PSA 9 out there. It's just it had good, fat borders.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good-looking card. But, I mean, I was actually slightly surprised it didn't go for higher, considering how very rare even a PSA 8 card is. And then here's an 8.5 that was, you know, beyond reproach to me. Well, nothing's beyond reproach nowadays, but you know what I mean.
And then we could throw out for an argument, then maybe this PSA 6 is going to go for half of that. So then now you're looking at, you know, 70,000-80,000 for it. And then if that happens, man, forget it. I mean, that's going to be unbelievable to try to really imagine as far as whatever else comes to the market and however it's graded. I mean, the NAG is going to drive the vintage card market for a while. To say the least.
Yep.
So truly amazing. So
that hunt auction. Yeah, it was fun in the live format. Once you got the hang of it and you got to see it, it was pretty fun to be looking ahead and see stuff that was selling. I did enjoy that. Yeah. It was my first, you know, internet live auction I'd seen. So.
Yeah, they're becoming very popular. I think they're definitely going to be a major wave of the future. For them, and again, be interesting to see what else comes out of the market. And it seems Hunt really drops a lot of stuff right at their Super Bowl auction time when there's a lot of interest and the like. So, pretty interesting to say the least. All right, our guest is ready, and I'd like to introduce him and start to talk about his collection. At this time, I'd like to introduce our special guest. He lives in Atlanta, Georgia, and has been a tennis coach for 40-plus years, coaching high-level junior players. He's had quite a few of them make the professional tennis tour and play at the U.S. Open and Wimbledon, to name a few venues. He was born in Birmingham, Alabama, and collected cards as a kid, bought packs at the corner local store, and always liked football better than baseball. His main collecting years were 1958 to 1962, He found his cards in his mother's attic when his son asked him about the Ken Griffey rookie card in 1989. And then he started setting up at small shows with his son and daughter. He's now 71 years young and saw the Topps Mexican cards in the 1990s, and they looked terrible but interesting to him. And around 2000, he bought some original cases that came from Mexico and got started in collecting them. And the rest, as we say, is history. I'd like to introduce to our show Topps Mexican authority, historian, and collector, Mr. Jim Ragsdale. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you loud and clear.
Nope.
Thanks for being on.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me on.
You're quite welcome. Jim,
Kazoo night, Jim.
Sorry?
I said Gesundheit. I've heard you sneeze. I've heard you sneeze a couple times while we're Bob and I were talking.
Sorry.
Jim, I want to start off by asking you, how'd you get started collecting football cards?
Like I said, when I was get out of school, I'd go to the corner grocery store and buy a couple packs, and I always liked. I started in 58, I think, based on the cards I had in the attic. I remember doing the scratch-offs on the 58s and the 60s, 61s, and that's how I got started. You know, we liked Jim Brown, Johnny Unitas, still do. So, and then I would go downtown, and I collected coins as well, just Buffalo nickels, Lincoln pennies. My mom would give me $5, and I'd go down to the bank and get that many rolls of pennies and go through them. At that time, you could get Indian cents and some 1909S, 14Ds on the Lincoln.
Wow.
And so it led into me being a coin dealer later on with a friend of mine here in Atlanta. I was his assistant. And I would go to Long Beach and the Fun Show down in Orlando and a lot of different places, Milwaukee. And I remember just one time I saw a section, especially out at Long Beach, a card section. And I went over there and just took a look, and it was pretty interesting. And so when my son was we'd go to the Braves games here, and he wanted the rookie card of Dale Murphy and Ken Griffey. So I knew how to deal, I guess you could say, from being a coin dealer. And I just started setting up and doing some coin shows. I mean, some card shows, excuse me. And I collected everything, the 48 leaf. I had at one time the number one felt back set on the registry and the number one 51 magic set unrubbed. And that developed from just being setting up at shows and liking the old football and everything.
Wow!
Did you have a 48 leaf? Did you have a 48 leaf set, Jim?
I do not. I've actually sold everything. I had a partial set. I really liked the varieties in the 48 leaf. I was collecting them before they were listing them. Some of the different Blue Sock on Van Buren, just different things like that. But sold all of that. The only thing I really have left is the Mexican football set, and I have some 48 Magic. I had a complete set graded. It was I did sell the football and the baseball in the Heritage auction about 10 years ago. And the felt back set and the magic set also in the Heritage auction. And I sold my exhibit. I had a complete exhibit set graded.
Oh, wow.
From SGC with the, colors, the different color cards too.
Oh, wow.
The pink, the blue, the green. So I really like football. But the 77 set, I don't know, there's something about it that, it's just, it's very scarce. It was very low production on it. And I would see a few cards at the shows, and they always look terrible, because they have the gum stain on a lot of them. And I would ask them what they wanted for, and they'd say $10-$15. And I would say, are you kidding me? And they would say, no, it's a very rare set. And so
do you think it was the Largent card in the Do you think it was the Largent card in the set that originally attracted you to it?
Actually, you want me to tell you the true story on the Largent card? I bought 10 boxes, and the second box had 9 patents in it. I bought them from the guy who brought it back. I saw it on eBay, just a box, and I emailed him. He was the guy who brought it back from Mexico. He told me the whole story, New Jersey dealer. And the second box had 9 papers. They weren't very nice. Only a couple of them were. They had like gum stains on them. They had almost like a roller mark that almost cut the card in half. So, but I got 9, so I emailed him back and I said, you know, what can we do? And I bought a case from him. It wasn't a real case. Is not a wasn't a Topps case. It was in a candy bar box. And he just put 54 boxes in a candy bar box. Now, I know that sounds like a lot, but it's only 2 cards in a pack. And there's 36 packs in a box. And one of the cards is damaged most of the time, the one on top. But that's how I got started with collecting the Mexican. And as I mentioned earlier, that's how I got started just in football, by going to coin shows and seeing the cards at the coin shows.
Yeah.
And setting up.
You know, it's interesting here in Connecticut. Here in Connecticut, just as an aside, you're talking about coin shows. We have like 2 shows a month that are basically coin, stamp, and card/toy shows. So you can find a lot of different things there. I mean, there's only a couple of card dealers there. There's probably a half a dozen coin dealers, 2 or 3 stamp dealers, and a couple of the like diecast car dealers. So it's pretty interesting to see everything all in one show. But to me, it's still, I still say having a separate coin show, separate stamp show, and a separate card show makes the most sense. You know what I mean? So
yes.
But it's interesting as coin shows ended up having a lot of card dealers over the years, and then now everything is regressing back to pure coin shows, pure card shows, so on and so forth. I just wanted to throw that out.
Yes. Well, that was back in the day before the internet when we started, so it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun, I thought. You know, so. But the internet does, you can do a lot of things with it for sure.
Exactly.
So, several years ago, you wrote an article on the 77 Mexi set, and you're quoted in there. I mean, I think your preamble is "Beware the Dirty Dozen," which is pretty cool. I love the Mexican set. I collect a few of them, but you know, you've kind of mentioned how you got into it. You know, you just discovered it at a show. But I mean, a little more detail on how you really hunkered down. I mean, you've collected quite a few things. How did you decide to end up with that set? What really got you into it? I mean, you know,
Okay. Well. What happened is I ended up buying 3 cases. There was only 5 or 6 cases. When I'm calling it a case, you have to understand, I still have one of the original candy bar boxes. I had 2, and another fellow wanted it, so I worked to deal with him, Carl Lamandola. He's a big collector. And
we know Carl.
But, y'all know Carl for sure? Yeah, okay. But I went through 172 boxes, opened every one of them, the 2 card boxes. And after opening that many, I had 360 different cards out of 528. They go and run. They weren't collated very well, you know. And so we started, you know, some other collectors at that time. This was around 2000. And we, all of us would just trade raw cards, you know, and I wanted to have a complete set. Everybody would say there's some cards that are almost impossible to find, and they were, they really were. It was the 4 toughest cards to find are Eric Torkelson 434, and the Rich Sowles 488, and the number 21 Lawrence Gaines. And the number 404, the Detroit Lions.
Jarvis.
That's Ray Jarvis. That's right. Those are the. And if you, I've seen some sheets from 77, and they're right on the corner of one of the 77 sheets. Now this is the regular sheet, but I know it's the same sheets because I have some panels that match up to the 77. Yeah. Some Mexican panels. And these are right on the corner, those 4. And who knows what happened, but they didn't make it out too much. You know, there's only been 3 sevens of the Lawrence Gaines, and I've only seen less than five that came out of a pack. Most of the time we call it cards from Mexico, and they're, you know, they're the few that got out in Mexico and were collected, they usually creased. But the original cards, there's only three. I've only seen three or four Gaines. Same thing with Torkelson. Same thing with Sowells and Jarvis that were nice. So I don't know what happened.
Three of those four, big rare cards are in the D series sheet, you know, because obviously there's four, you know, there's four 132 card sheets, you know, A, B, C, D.
Okay.
So series D sheet in the 1977 Mexi sounds like it had some struggles.
Actually, 11 of the 12 Dirty Dozen came off of that sheet.
Just the Gaines, number 21, doesn't.
So
what, is there a history of that fourth sheet, that Series D sheet, not making it out of Mexico? Is that the theory?
It must not have. My opinion on it, you know, the cards are perforated, you know, so most of the Mexican collectors feel like they were hand torn off the sheets, you know, so not cut. They weren't cut, you know, they have the perforation. So we sort of visualize some guys sitting around on chairs just taking the sheets and tearing the cards, because I've had cards right out of the pack that are torn and have creases on them and that kind of thing. But that particular sheet, I really don't feel like it either was in the group that the New Jersey collector was able to obtain. He actually went down there. He told me to get the Star Wars and the Charlie's Angels. He had no idea there was football there. And he saw it up against the wall and asked him about it. And so he brought that back as well. But it wasn't a whole lot of it. I'm just assuming that either those sheets got out in circulation or they weren't in the boxes that were left in the factory.
Wow.
Yeah, obviously some quality control issues down there, because you know the American 77 set doesn't have that same Series D, you know, shortcoming. You know, it's just as popular as the other three series.
Well, I've looked at that sheet too, and there are many, many cards on that sheet that are very scarce. I call it the Dirty Dozen. That's what everybody called it. There's also a second Dirty Dozen as well. There's about 25 cards that are really, really hard to find, you know, in what I call pack fresh condition, out of a pack.
Yeah.
Now, what you end up having to do, Jim, to get the cards graded and or, you know, to actually collect the set in graded condition?
Well, I always graded my other cards, and so my first goal was to just have a complete set. And I really didn't, around 2002, just trading around and different things, I ended up having a complete set raw. And I decided to send a couple in. I sent about 30 cards in. The Staubach, Jim Zorn, I think I sent in some Franco Harris. I sent some Largent. Couple Largents.
Yeah.
And
attaboy.
If you want to know about how rare the Largents are, I'll tell you. But anyway,
I'm aware of it. I've got a couple of them.
Okay, I got a few sevens and some eights, even with the preparations. I didn't know how they were going to grade them. So after I got a few decent grades, I decided to send in a big lot, so I did. I picked out the best 600 cards I had. I just really went through them.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I sent in 600 cards, and that group came back, and that got me started on, a complete set. And there was another fellow out in Washington State who was doing a similar thing to me. He had actually bought from, there was two guys, the guy that went down and got the cards and another collector in New York who had, they had some loose cards too they brought back in the panels. And the Washington State collector bought a lot, most of that. So he had some clean stuff. So he was sending it in, and we both decided to put our cards in the registry, the PSA registry. And we weren't complete by any means, but he saw mine, I saw his, and we started trading back and forth. You know, some graded cards that I had and that he didn't have, and I got some cards, vice versa. And we both had a goal of having a complete set in that graded 8.0 and up. And then we wanted to try to have a set with all eights. That still doesn't
wow.
exist. There's still four cards that have never made eight in the set. And and later
do you remember
on,
what that young man? Do you remember what that
me?
Young man's name in Washington was? Was it Mike?
Yes, I do. No, no. His name was
Don. Okay.
But he and I, and later on, we both completed. I had the number one set by just a little bit, and he had the number two set by just a little behind me. And later on, I bought that set from him.
Mm,
and that's
right
how,
on.
And I combined the two sets, and that's why my set is a pretty strong set.
Wow.
And
I bought
another one later on who I'd built a set for a gentleman from Canada, and his wife was into the government there in Canada, and they moved to China. So he sold it to me before he went to China. So I've actually combined three of the top four sets, the graded sets, to come up with my current graded set.
Wow.
Well, now, as a guy who has the Steve Largent Master set, trust me, I really struggled to find that that Mexican card at a PSA 7, and later on I upgraded to an 8. So
okay.
it is not an easy card to find.
No, it's not.
It's interesting.
There are 8 8s, 1 8 5, and 1 9.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
That's it.
I think somebody approached me like 6 months ago with the inside track on an 8.5 and asked me if I was interested. I said no. I was kind of up there.
Okay.
There's a complete 77 ungraded Mexican set on eBay right now. It shows up in my Steve Largent search. You know, when I sift through eBay.
Yes.
A guy named Ken Cope is selling it, and his entire description of the set is an excerpt from your PSA article on the 77 Mexican set. He literally just cuts and pastes what you had to say, and he's like, you know, the infamous. It's almost funny. He's like, you know, just you know the infamous Jim Ragsdale quoted it below and says this set is this. It's kind of funny.
Well, let me just say this. Oh, go ahead. Keep going.
Oh, that's no, I was...
Go ahead.
No, you go. People hear enough of me
talking. Well, what I was going to say is there's so little information on the Mexican cards. I get, you know, phone calls and you know, it's very, people don't, there's so much little information. That's the reason, you know, with Carl, he and I have done some deals before. I actually... Like I said, the felt back, I bought a box one time on eBay that had the loose felt backs in the box, original box, and they would just come out of the pack and that type of thing. And Carl and I were both collecting felt backs, and that's how he and I sort of introduced ourselves to each other. You know, the same thing with the magic and everything. But it's such a little information. I know that we're going to do this upcoming article in the Gridiron Greats about the Mexican. And I'm very excited about that, just to get some information out about, you know, so some collectors can understand about the Mexican series, that type of thing.
Yeah. What is the most expensive card in the set?
Well, I know that a Peyton in 8-5 went for right at $13,000.
Oh, my. Okay, that'll do it.
Wow.
Yeah, and
wow.
I know a Largent has gone for $8,000. Not the 9, between
yeah.
$8,000 and $9,000. And I know that I paid $3,000 for a couple of cards, the Torkelson in 8-5 and the Silas.
Wow.
Peaked.
Wow.
And
wow.
I noticed y'all said earlier about the 8-5, I believe it's the Nagurski, and I had the
yep.
9. I made the 9 on the number 3 card, the O.J. Simpson and the Walter Payton leaders. I made the 9 in that first 600 group. But I really didn't like it that much. So I have an 8-5. I sold it. And I sold it, traded for an 8 and some money. It really went to between $4,000 and $5,000 for the card. And
wow.
I have an 8-5 on that. I have an 8-5 on that one now because I like it. The 9 had a little bit of yellowing on it. If you look at the number 3, sometimes it has a little yellow tint. And the one I have is a clean white all the way across. So that's the only time I've ever downgraded a card. But I actually like the 8-5 better than the 9.
Wow.
I love it when people when people know that much about a set that they can talk about a yellow tint on card number 3. That is immersing yourself into a set, Jim, and I tip my hat to that. Do you have any good stories? You can't have collected a set like this for as long as you have and not have some good stories, and obtaining, meeting people, et cetera.
Sure. I mean, I've had a lot of good stories, I guess really one of my favorite besides opening all the boxes and trading around early on and that type of thing is obtaining from a gentleman named Chad. He's a pretty big time collector from, I believe he's from Santa Barbara. I bought 7,000 cars. He had some original cases as well too. And he documented everything that came out of those original 2 cases. He also had 3 complete sets. Now they weren't, a lot of them were, rough cards, but he had it was a mixed set of cards out of the packs. And so I bought that from him, and that really added some high grade cards. The Jarvis, I got a Jarvis out of a box, and it was 8, and there's only 2 of those. And several of the cards that had never made 8, and I had them in 7, I obtained those from him. So I was very appreciative of him, and he never sold a card, he told me. He just liked to collect cards. He collected all the real old stuff, the T206s and everything else. But the only modern set he liked was the 77 Mexican, as far as I understand. And the reason I had the article, I collected all of them, the 71s and 57s, 58, I collected them all, but they had an article in the PSA magazine, I believe it's what's it called, Sports Collectors Marketplace or something like that. And the article was the 71 set was the toughest modern set of all the set in high grade. And so I called up the writer of the article, or sent him an email, and I said, it's not the hardest set. And we started talking, and he's the one that wrote the article, the 77 Mexican set. There's really no modern set that compares to the rarity of the 77 Mexican in high grade.
Hmm.
Even the early set, they don't compare. What do you think the rarest card is graded from 55 all the way currently from Tops? I'm just talking about Tops now. I'll tell you, it's the Funny Ring checklist. It's the Funny Ring checklist has 3 8s and 1 8-5.
Well, you didn't give me a chance to guess. You didn't give me a chance to guess, Jim.
I'm sorry. There are several
I have
from 62. There are several from 62 that are pretty scarce, too. You want to guess on that one?
Wow.
They're common. They're
from
common.
The 62? That would be...
The Ditka from 62?
Well, that's...
Or
Ernie Davis? The Ernie Davis?
Like Bill Pellington, guys like there are a couple of commons where there's like 7, 8 and you know, that type of thing. But those are the rarest cards that have been graded from PSA. In the Mexican set, there are 190 cards that are rarer in high grade than the Funny Ring checklist.
Wow.
There's like 20 cards that only have 1, 8, nothing else higher. There's 4 cards that have a 7, nothing else higher. And they're out of the other 190, they either have 2 or 3 8s with nothing higher in the Mexican set. And most of the stuff has been opened up, too. It's truly a unique set, in my opinion. That's the reason I like it, because of the rarity and high grade.
Yeah, definitely rare, there's no doubt. But, we were kicking around. Did you have any story meeting up with somebody in a shady parking lot at midnight to trade wax packs?
Oh, that type of stuff? Well.
Yeah. Meeting Carl Amidala at a Circle K.
Well, I did meet Carl down in Valdosta, Georgia. He drove up from Tampa, Florida, and I drove down from Atlanta, and we met and discussed Mexican, and that's when he got the candy bar box and a couple of Buffalo Bills. He got some Buffalo Bills. He's still a little short on a complete Buffalo Bill set. I think he needs 2 cards.
Wow.
Now, I've had a lot of good experiences with the Mexican collectors, but it's fun. It's fun trying to put together the set, that's for sure.
Jim, I'm curious. Yeah, Carl. Do you collect anything else with football cards or football memorabilia?
No, I had, like I said, I had the felt bags, the 51 Magic, the 48 Magic. I collected, 57s, 58s. Mainly I like the 60s and 61s. And the exhibit cards. I really like the exhibit cards. I still have some exhibits left.
But I like
that. I
saw
my number one. Yeah, it's a beautiful set. I saw my number one set in the Heritage Auction, and it was graded by SGC. It had some 96s in it, some 92s, quite a few 88s.
Wow.
But the real difficult cards, I only had a couple in 84. I can't remember who they were, but I know I had a Wiedemeyer in 80 that was a green tint. That was my favorite
card.
Part.
That's a tough card. I love the
I have collected other things as well. I'm an Alabama fan, so I have some Alabama stuff. I went to Alabama, graduated from Alabama way back.
I couldn't tell.
Excuse me. That's funny
because Brenda and I were just in Gulf Shores, Alabama, a couple of weeks ago. We were staying at our a friend's condo there on the beach, and he's an Auburn graduate, so he's down there with his Auburn hat and Auburn sweatshirt, and I really liked it. First time I was ever there. Real nice area.
Well, when you lose the Alabama Auburn game, it's a whole year. You have to stay low. You have to.
We were in a restaurant
good
down there called Lulu's.
Yeah. Lulu's Bait Shop.
Yeah.
Lulu's Bait Shop.
And the one right outside there in outside of Orange Beach. I'm not sure. I'm confused.
Yeah.
But wherever the restaurant was, we were there, and half the bar had Alabama on, and the other half had Auburn on. So it was pretty interesting.
That's exactly right.
To see the rivalry.
That's exactly right.
Funny.
Surprised the riot didn't break out. Southern boys, they take their football seriously.
No, they're very, they're very, very, very nice and very civil down there. They're very gentlemanly.
Yeah, I always liked football. I mean, I guess I got started. I went to the first game Joe Namath ever played for Alabama at Legion Field. Threw 5 touchdown passes.
Oh, wow.
And back in those days, Bear Bryant, they very rarely threw passes, but I went to that game. Oh, and I went to Kenny Staber when he was playing. So, you know, that's what got me really interested in football, I guess you could say, more than the baseball, is watching the football games there in Alabama.
Yeah.
Hmm. Love it. So, the 77 set is pretty much your baby right now. It's what you collect. I mean,
yes.
So other than those four, Gaines, Jarvis, Torkelson, Souls, I mean, in a PSA 8 or higher grade card, is there anything on your want list? I mean, or is that it?
Yes. Well, no, those four are the four I would like to have. The 21, actually, Drew Pearson is number – he's never had an 8, number 130. 84,
oh, wow.
Matt Blair. 84, Matt Blair. He's never had an 8. And number 444, Mike Pruitt. So if anybody has something like that and that's out of a pack that's very nice, those are my four. I'm still on the quest to have a complete graded set 8 and up. I do have it on everything except 21, 84, 130, and 444, those four. That would be on my watch.
Wow.
You know you're set, man. I love it. So, okay, so when you write to Santa every year, it's those cards in a PSA.
I still look for them. I look for them all the time. You know, I was down to about 7 or 8, but the big collection I got, I did get 3 or 4 eights out of that collection. It helped out.
Wow.
Good for you.
Unbelievable.
I love somebody who's just got the passion for a set like that. I mean, 84 Tops is the set I'm probably most passionate about, that and 48 Leaf. But I've stepped away from them, you know, from time to time and then come back. But it's just cool. I mean, you know, and you only get to know that about a set by immersing yourself in it, by collecting it, by living and breathing it, you know, and writing an article about it, Jim. So, yeah.
It's true.
Amazing.
There's even some talk about maybe writing a little paperback book about it or something. There's some talk about that. We'll see how that goes. I'd like to. I'm 71 years old, like I said. I really think I know as much about the cards as just about anybody, and I wouldn't mind leaving that knowledge in writing sometime, you know. So that's one of my goals as well.
Should definitely pursue it. Yeah. The hobby would embrace it, to say the least. I mean, stuff I read in now this new article we're going to have in Gridiron Greats for the spring issue. I mean,
yes.
Amazing information about that set. I mean, I always found it fascinating. I mean, I probably got maybe 10 cards from the set, and I always was the type, if I saw one at a show, I would buy it, you know, no matter what the condition was. But I rarely see them up here, and just fascinating,
right,
to say the least. Fascinating.
I'm
curious, Jim, would you have any advice you could give beginning collectors out there?
That's a good question. What I really have from most beginning collectors is to collect the team set first. You know, the complete set is pretty difficult these particular days. It's possible, but you know, if you are a Dallas Cowboy, I have a Cowboy fan, Steelers, Vikings, Rams, Giants, just Dolphins. I would suggest you start out with the team set and see how you go with that. And then, you know, the cards are not cheap either, so it just depends on what your budget is as well, I guess. But I'd recommend starting out with a team set or two. and just see how that goes. And then if you really like the cards, then you can go from there. I have a few collectors who are about 30 cards short, 10 cards short, that type of thing. And, you know, I try to help them out when I can. But that, I think that's a good way to start in today's environment.
Good advice.
I would agree. I would definitely agree with that because there's so much out there, and it can be overwhelming to a new collector. But in most cases, I think a new collector gets his or her feet wet very, very briefly, and then they really see what they like, and then they start collecting it. And that's the fun of collecting. That's always been the fun of collecting to me. And
yes.
In your case, I am just in awe of your knowledge and your collection of 1977 Topps Mexican football cards. It's an amazing, amazing, amazing collection you have.
But thank you.
Nice.
All right. Jim, thank you for being on. We're almost out of time. You gave us an education on this set. And, again, looking forward to the spring issue coming out, and we'll see that article on the 77 Mexicans. And by all means, I urge you to write that book because it would be a very, very historical and educational piece for the hobby on this set.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much for having me on. I've never been on a podcast, but I certainly enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for being on, Jim. We appreciate it.
Okay. All right. Good night, guys.
Good night.
Good night.
We're down to almost 2 minutes. I'm going to hand off to you. What'd you learn on tonight's show?
For the first time, I think, ever, I found someone who was opening wax packs earlier than you were, Bob. Jim mentioned.
Yes, you have.
Jim mentioned 58, and then he jumped to 60 tops. I mean, he was talking about doing the scratch-offs, you know, and I'm like, holy crap. So when he summed it up and said he's 71, I'm like, okay, that makes sense. He was born in – my mom has turned 70 in a couple weeks, and she was born in 1950, so okay. So.
Yep.
He was born in 49 or so.
Jim is 10 years older than me, so he's got that little gap there. So I start at 65. That's just the way it worked out.
Yep.
The way it is. But it's so cool to hear, you know, somebody opening up a 1958 pack and a 60 pack and a 61 pack. It just amazes me.
Oh my gosh.
You know, the fun of opening and not worrying about condition, not worrying about hermetically sealing those cards, so on and so forth. It's the fun of the collection. I am just in shock at, you know, his knowledge and the Mexican side itself. I never realized it. I mean, I was doing research for the show this week, and I'm saying, holy mackerel, I couldn't believe what was involved in this. And like I said, you know, I go to a show. In 20 years, I probably got 10 cards. You know what I mean? And they're basically all like one or two cards I picked up at shows, and that's it. You know, it's just amazing. Amazing. Truly amazing. All right, we're down to a minute. Joe, I'm going to hand off to you again. Final thoughts.
Just good. I just always wonder, first of all, if I have an accent to a guy from the Deep South like that. That's just deep thoughts, but, you know, because, I mean, you're introducing him. We've obviously, you know, emailed back and forth with Jim a few times. He's on a couple boards we belong to. But I actually didn't know he's from Alabama. And when you're rattling off his bio, it's like, born in Alabama, went to school in Alabama, and I'm just like, oh, boy, here comes the accent. No, I'm just kidding.
it's a cool accent, and being down there for the few days we were down in Alabama, it was just nice to hear every place we went. You know, there's nice accent, nice, very, very friendly people. Just so different than here in Connecticut. It's amazing, amazing. All right, well, almost out of time. Check out our website, GridironGreatsMagazine.com. Subscribe if you're not a subscriber, and hopefully we'll be back next week with another show. That's all we have for tonight. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Good night.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.